Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 122. Yes, this is Caffeination 122. Hope everybody out there is having a good weekend. It's been a little rough here at the Caffeination headquarters. As you may or may not be able to tell by my voice, I'm either on the verge of getting better or not so much from getting sick. Apparently the boy decided that this would be the absolute perfect time to contract yet another one of his strange illnesses that only infants can get. So we are trying to work through it here. He may or may not be teething. We don't know. All we know is that he's been up for pretty much almost every night. So brevity is the name of the game for tonight's podcast. We're starting early. We're hoping to finish just a little bit early so we can get to bed, in anticipation of the boy's 3 to 4 a.m. wake-up call. So depending on how many times he gets up tonight depends on how much actual caffeine I'm going to need tomorrow. He's testing the limits, let me tell you that right now, of the amount of caffeine that I can imbibe in a given day and still become a functional human being. Today, not so much. I ended up passing out most of the day, you know, in a chair. Like, whenever I'd sit down where there was a moment's peace, just phew, right out. So it's been kind of a fun weekend. So we're going to try and get through this. Hopefully my voice will hold up and out for the entirety of the show. I was about to beg off for tonight's show, but I realized I did that last weekend for a holiday, and I'm not in the habit of doing that repeatedly. So I figured my voice is not such that it's horrible to listen to, I hope. So we're going to play it back just a little bit just to make sure that everything's going all right, and then we will get on with your show. We have a couple little bits of general information we're going to start the show off. First of all, I'd like to tell you a little bit about the state of the show, how we feel that it's going. So far, so good. We have a couple things that we'd like to improve on. We'd like to improve on some of the more listener feedback and listener comments. So please, we enjoin you to come on over and either register to receive our show notes in the in an email every week. That's right after I finish the show. I email out the show notes to everybody who requests them, and that gives you a direct download link so you don't actually have to head on over to the site. We do, however, enjoy that when people head on over to the site or subscribe to our RSS feed so that they can see the weekly blog postings. We post roughly 2 to 3 times a week. We had a couple different articles last week that we hope people enjoyed. some of them were better received than others. We've actually gotten a lot of response from some of the smaller pieces that we've written, such as the stuff on My Cyber Twin, and we've had a lot of people interested in Juiced, which we are still not sure whether or not we can talk about, but we're going to contact the people who run Juiced this week and see if we can do a full review on it, and then we'll be pushing that out. So we'd like to improve a little bit on that. So if you're looking for this podcast, you can find it over at caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. And it's, we'd also like you to send in email, suggestions, everything else. I do try and respond to everybody who sends in email. We've had a couple people actually express a little bit of surprise at that. And one of the things that always irritated me about some of the bigger shows was that if you send an email in, you don't even get like a thank you back half the time. I mean, I really try to respond to everybody who sends something, and usually relatively within a day or so. So if I don't respond to you, it's either that it got caught by my spam filter or I'm just swamped with other things, and I will actually get back to you, I promise. But we try to make sure that we are more of an interactive show than some of the other ones that are out there. Because, I mean, I understand that it takes your time and your effort to actually find stuff that you'd like us to talk about. So, hey. And we have a general thanks to everybody who has submitted content, specifically for the show, to Fabrice and James. And hopefully you'll find your content within the show. One of them was actually submitted by both of you, and we were supposed to do it on the last show. It just got lost in the stacks. And then the next thing we'd like to talk to you about, sometime in the middle of this week, we might actually have an extra show to make up for the one we missed last Sunday, to give you, make sure you have plenty of caffeination to get you through your week. And that one's going to have an extended tech talk on RSS. It's going to be not necessarily how you deal with it with podcasts or how you deal with setting one up, but it's rather how you go about using RSS to simplify your daily news reading, how you set it up to do a whole bunch of different things. So hopefully you'll find that interesting. We're going to talk a little bit about Flickr. We're going to talk a little bit about things that are near and dear to my heart, such as webcomics. And we're going to talk, stuff like podcasts. And we're going to try and break down the essentials of RSS and whether or not it would actually help you in your daily news reading. And that's about the end of the general information. Before we get on into this, we really wanted to talk a little bit about our sponsor. So if you're looking for a better way to work with or together with everybody during your conference calls, your solution is quite simple. Web conferencing with GoToMeeting. During your call, everyone who logs on to GoToMeeting.com will see your computer screen show up on their monitors. It's like you're in the same room at the same time. GoToMeeting is the perfect for sales meetings or product demos, real-time training, or collaboration. For instance, if you're all working on a project or a spreadsheet or something, it's helpful to have everybody on the same page. Literally, you'll all see it. So, plus, you're not charged per minute like some of the other providers. They're not going to nickel and dime you along the way. It's a flat fee. You can meet as long as you want, as often as you need, for one flat rate. With GoToMeeting, you can meet anyone, anywhere, without ever leaving your office. You're not only going to end up saving time, but also a lot of money, too. So see for yourself. Try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/podcast. That's try GoToMeeting free today. Yeah, we do have one little bit of musical accompaniment. We actually got finished our research. Usually it takes us about an hour to an hour and a half to research all the topics that we'd like to throw out there for you. But we have been using a little bit of RSS recently, so we're hoping that that's going to spice up the show, and we'll be able to get a lot more content in quicker and sort through it and cull for only the best. We'd like the idiocy to rise to the top, like the cream, so that you can skim it off and drink it as you will. But we do have a little bit of musical accompaniment today, also from the PodSafe Music Network, one of our favorite venues to find information. That's at music.podshow.com. And first up, today's artist is called Sundown Caffeine. Any idea why we picked that one? No clue here. But their song Last Star is a great, clean, crisp music, so I hope that you enjoy it. Again, here is Sundown Caffeine from the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com, and their song Last Star.
Sky.
Again, that was Sundown Caffeine from the PodSafe Music Network and their song Last Star. Hopefully you liked that. Great rocking guitar right through on that one. So hopefully everybody enjoyed it. I know I did. We keep trying to find new and interesting bands to introduce you to here on the PodSafe Music Network. So if there's an artist that you know personally or you enjoy, such as Jonathan Colton, who keeps getting requested to be thrown up on the show, not actually to throw up on the show, that would kind of be weird, I mean, given it's an audio podcast, but still, a little disgusting. But all right, we have a whole bunch of tech tidbits for you today, and then we actually have a decent amount of caffeinated bits for you today. I did a little bit more research, dug a little bit deeper. We've been kind of skating by the actual primary part of the caffeination's namesake. The caffeine has been getting short shrift, so to speak. So up first with the tech tidbits, by the way, can you tell that I am quite caffeinated today? Not only did I have to be, as a necessity to actually attend to this show, but I decided I deserve, or not I deserve, but rather you deserve a fully caffeinated host. So in the cup of life here, I am up at the brim, shall we say, of caffeine here. Not yet quite hitting the jitters, but I will give you my secret to caffeination while sick towards the end of the show. Hopefully it'll help somebody out down the road. But one of the weird secrets with me, at least, not a secret so much anymore, rather, but when I'm sick, when I'm ill, I can't actually drink coffee. I know it's horrible, but coffee just for some reason irritates my throat. Maybe it's the acidity of it at all. I'm not really sure. But it does horrible things to my voice. It does everything else. And this is actually with the minimal amount of coffee during the day. So I'll give you my secrets to being properly caffeinated without the direct imbibing of coffee. So that coming up after the tech tidbits here. Now, we have a strange assortment, shall we say, from the tech tidbits today. The first one up is linked directly off of Engadget, but the quote that I use, it's not a question of how he grips it, but rather, it's a simple thing of airspeed velocity or airweight velocity, directly off of Monty Python, shamelessly stolen from them. I love Monty Python, but still has nothing to do whatever with the story. One of the things that people, at least using the next generation consoles, have found is that they really enjoy the Xbox 360 controller, the white wing, you know, wireless controller. They say it has such a wonderful and natural feel. I mean, this is heads and tails above the previous Xbox 360 controllers, which were actually described is using a giant bear to try and control a thing. You should really look it up on Penny Arcade. I don't actually have enough time to find the old comic. I know I've linked to it before. But people seem to really enjoy them, and so much so it's actually supplanting the PlayStation 2 and the PlayStation 3 by, you know, reference, DualShock controllers, which were the previous, best used controllers. And I actually wasn't too fond of the DualShocks at first. I liked the N64 controllers. But somebody out there has decided that the easiest way for them to get the experience they want with their brand new $600 PS3 is for them to take the Syaxis controllers, or the 6-axis, which is the wireless controller for the PlayStation 3, butcher it, and fit it somehow into a Xbox 360 controller. So you really need to head on over to Engadget to check this one out. You can go via the link from caffeination.com, and the guy who did it is a professional at modding. Basically, he's the one who did the do-it-yourself, he's the one who made the Xbox 360 laptop, the Wii laptop. I think he even turned a PlayStation 3 into a grill. I'm not sure, but that one might be out of the realm of his expertise. But he is a wonderful and expert modder. So you can definitely see his handiwork inherent in this. The only thing that I actually think doesn't look top-notch, he took the entire innards of the PlayStation 3 controller, fit them in, and worked it so that all the buttons and everything work. The only thing that I don't think is done well, and that's not his fault, but it's rather PlayStation's fault, I don't like the PlayStation logo. The PlayStation logo was great for the original PlayStation. It looked slightly dated for PlayStation 2. It looks really out of place on the incredibly well-designed PlayStation 3. PlayStation 3 is a very smooth, flowing, it's an attractive looking box. Same thing with the Xbox 360, except with Xbox, they modified their logo for the Xbox to kind of get rid of the old chunky X that had been the namesake of it. So I really don't like the fact that the PS3 uses the same PlayStation logo. It just kind of looks really dated, kind of looks really amateurish when compared to some of the other stuff. So, but you should really head on over and check this thing out. And then, as if controllers weren't yet, somebody else using a Wiimote to control something strange, but this person has developed a way, also an Engadget, to use a Wiimote to control a robotic arm. Now, all we need is somebody to create a beast to go around this and then insert this into Robot Wars so that while their robot is actually competing in the competition, they can use the Wiimote arm to actually, fine-tune the adjustments of destruction. So it's getting closer and closer to actually true robotic manipulation of things, and it's interesting to see how it's done. There's a video up there. I really haven't gone through the whole video, but I'm pretty sure everybody out there would find it interesting. We have a slight derivation from that. We have what I consider the fodder for the day. Why is that? Because it was on every damn feed that I looked at. Every single feed that I was looking at, it's like, oh yeah, mobile phones are wiping out bees. What? All right, keep going. So you get on over to the next feed. Mobile phones found dangerous to bees. Move along. After the third or the fourth time that it popped up in the feed, I was like, all right, now I'm actually going to have to start taking a look at this. Now, what it seems is I didn't know this, but bees will actually vacate an area if there's overhead power lines. And apparently the electromagnetic fields does something to mess with the bees' internal systems. So apparently mobile phones exhibit some of the same symptoms, I can only say, that high power lines do. There's some kind of change that comes over bees. They stop them from pollinating crops, and with the prevalence of mobile phones and mobile phone towers, rather, there seems to be an absence of bees. Now, if only this did this instead of to bees, because I don't really have anything against bees, other than the fact that every once in a while they sting me. Now, hornets, to hell with hornets. I'm not a really big fan of hornets. I'm actually allergic to them, but I think anybody would be allergic to them if they're stung 9 or 10 times within like 5 to 10 seconds. Yeah, I fell on a bush that just happened to have a hornet's nest under it, and the hornets didn't like that. So, long story short, Benadryl became my friend very quickly. But if they could find something that irritates mosquitoes, now that would be awesome. Because I know, for instance, that cell phones do nothing to protect you against mosquitoes. Why? Because every time I go fishing, I have my cell phone on me and I still get bit. But still, I just thought it was kind of fun. I threw up both links that I found interesting to that up there. There's hundreds of other links up there. Now, if anybody has any other content about that, if they have any different interpretations of what it means or how this is affecting the world as a whole, please feel free to send us an email to caffeination@gmail.com. And we will gladly put your content back up there. Now we're going to switch back to the realm of gaming just for a little bit, but everybody here likes Donkey Kong, I'm pretty sure. It's one of those ever-present old arcade classics. It's one of the grand old masters of the arcade, that is. You have Mario Brothers, Donkey Kong, Pong, some people would put like Street Fighter 2, things like that. I mean, they're a little bit later on, but still, you get the idea. The old masters, to steal a term from the painting world. Well, the original Donkey Kong was actually a rather interesting game. It had something that looked directly like Mario in it, and I'm pretty sure it actually is the character Mario. You had to save the princess, and Donkey Kong was actually rolling barrels down a series of steel girders. The object was to climb up the steel girders and avoid the barrels at all costs. I think Mario actually had a hammer somehow to destroy the barrels. But apparently a bunch of students at USC, or UCSC, I believe that's University of South Carolina, on their engineering building used 64,000 Post-it notes. And on the four floors, of the main entrance to the engineering building, recreated the first level from Donkey Kong. It's unbelievable the precision that they have and the amount of time that these guys wasted. Hey, this is in the middle of the semester here, people. But I just thought I'd post it up there as a testament to the prevalence of video games in modern culture. I thought it was kind of interesting to see how detailed they actually got. I mean, you could have just thrown it up there and put Donkey Kong on one of the windows, but no. They actually recreated the entire level. So, yeah, it's interesting to see. You really need to head on over there and check it out. Now, there's another link up here. It says it's from Slashdot. It says Microsoft's requiring the more expensive Vista to run on a Mac. If you're going to run a dual boot Macintosh or Mac with Parallels or something else like that, you need to have a more expensive version of Windows Vista to install and run on it, rather than the cheapies, you know, the Home Basic or the Home Premium. You need at least the $299 business version or higher. Now, a lot of people are up in arms about this. They say, "Well, Microsoft, how can you do this? This is ridiculous. You know, why are you charging so much?" All right, well, let me ask you, exactly which version of Mac OS do you have to buy to be able to run on a PC? I mean, hey, they both run on Intel hardware now, right? Well, you can't buy Mac OS to run on a PC. It's because Mac won't license it. So, I mean, Microsoft is under no obligation whatsoever to actually license Vista to run on Mac hardware at all. So, I mean, I think, first of all, that it's a great idea that they are licensing it. Yes, they're making money hand over fist. There's no PC costs associated with it. I think people get a little bit caught up in the whole Mac versus PC thing, and they don't seem to realize it sometimes, that Macs and PCs take care of two very different sets of clientele sometimes. I mean, Microsoft Windows operates roughly... let's just say 85 to 90% of the PCs on the planet, the PCs being personal computers. So Macs are still PCs under this definition. And so they operate roughly 85 to 90% of the PCs on the planet. I mean, these are all business machines, these are all student machines, everything. And what Microsoft has done over the last 6 years has introduced one operating system that has covered all of those PCs and supported the previous operating system at the same time. In that period of time, Apple has released 4 or 5 operating systems, depending on how you count. So Apple only ever supports the current operating system minus 1 or 1.5. So what it is if the current version is 10.4, it's... man, I can't. I think this is Tiger. I can't remember the cats that go along with everything sometimes on short notice, but the current version is 10.4. They barely support 10.3 if you have problems with it, and they do not support 10.2. So given that, if Microsoft were to do that, release operating systems that quickly, people would be up in arms, because within the space of 5 years, they would have had to upgrade their operating system just because of the lack of support at least 2 to 3 times. Now, people are already up in arms over the increased hardware and everything on Vista. Yes, I think they shot a little bit too high on this. Yes, you really do need a much more expensive PC to run Vista the way it's supposed to be seen than you did to run XP. But then again, the XP is a 6-year-old operating system. It has some major flaws in the architecture. So hopefully Vista will, you know, address some of those. It's just, when I really look at the Mac versus PC discussion, a lot of the times you're really not comparing the same to the same. I mean, Apple's cater to a different market, a more creative market, at times a much more affluent market. You're not going to see a $200 Apple be upgraded the same way that a $200 PC is. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I'm more than willing to discuss this with anybody who wants to, but sometimes I feel that people, you know, like I've said before, I'm not a Mac guy and I'm not a PC guy. I'm a functionalist. Whatever I use, I like to work. So I have not used Windows Vista to its fullest extent. I've used the beta version a couple times. I have not used the final product, so to say. But, you know, I keep my opinions open until that. And I also, you know, I've used Mac 10.12 and 3 and 4. Or 1, 2, 3, and 4, rather. So I have a fair amount of experience on both, and I have a fair amount of experience on Linux. And frankly, my only real complaint about Linux is the driver support. And that is, by and large, it's the fault of the hardware vendor, not the Linux community. So, for instance, my brand new spiffy machine in work, the quote-unquote kick-ass machine that I was given, is a wonderful, massive beast of a powerhouse of a machine. So I was like, you know what? I'm always installing Linux on these older computers. Let me throw Linux on something that really can kick some tail. I threw it on there, and you know what happened? The sound card that I had wasn't supported. The video card that I had wasn't supported. And why was it? It's because the vendors themselves had not released any of the code to the Linux community. They will not allow them to develop drivers to it. Why? Because, well, these are PC cards. So, I mean, it just irritates me with that. So, I'm not sure what the perfect PC that I need to buy to have Linux just work on it. Now, I know people are going to say, well, you need to buy a Dell that has Linux already installed. No, that's not what I'm looking for. I mean, like, I had installed Linux on older machines, and there's some hardware issues. But then again, it speeds up an older machine. What I'm looking for is, like, a newer machine that I can throw Linux on right out of the box, has the best of the best hardware and graphics, and just be able to kick some tail with a serious lightweight operating system. But that hasn't happened yet. So hopefully we'll see that. Now, going from new to old and everything like that, but now we have an old school little comment here. I think we're really flying through today's show. Hopefully everybody's keeping up by this. By the way, you are listening to the Caffeination Podcast. If you're listening to the stream over at the Tech Podcast Network, then you can find it at www.caffeination.com. Hope that got through to everybody, but still. All right, we have What's Old is New Again. Now, this is some serious old school stuff. I actually saw this reported on a couple different websites. April 14th, 1860. It can't get any faster than the Pony Express. Yes, the Pony Express has the first order of mail delivered to Sacramento, California. And here's one of the ads that they had. Wanted: young, skinny, wiry fellows, not over 18, must be expert riders, willing to risk death daily, orphans preferred. That was an ad that ran in a California newspaper, and it says, of the 183 men known to have ridden for the Pony Express, very few were under 18, although there was one who was 11, and very few were orphans. Although they did get a huge wage for that period of time, $100 a month. So you can head on over to Wired.com to check the rest of that story out. It's kind of fun to think about how far we've come with message delivery. For instance, if I were to send one email at the beginning of this message, you can guarantee I'd be able to get it out by the time the intro was over. So it took somewhere around it took somewhere around 10 days to cover the entire route, and that was from St. Joseph, Missouri to Sacramento. So, wow, that's some serious distance there. And then we have another old school thing here, the first jump drive. Yes, it's a 5 megabit hard disk from 1956. Jump drive, that is, because it is massive. You need to pole vault over this thing. They show you it being offloaded from a cargo plane, and it takes up the majority of the forklift that it's being used on. So kind of another fun little fact there. In the university that I work, I actually work within the engineering building, but in the architecture program. But one of the engineers, when we were going through doing this massive virus update a couple years ago, actually had this strange piece of hardware strapped to his wall. And I was like, okay, this thing's about the size of a sheet of loose leaf. So I said, I'm sorry, professor, but what is that? He says, that's 1K of RAM. I'm sorry, what? He said, well, yes, in the earlier days of computers, when we were looking at different ways of creating RAM, random access memory, that was one of the prototypes for design for 1K of RAM. Now, just remember, everybody, 1K of RAM, and roughly, I think he said 1970-something, was around the size of an 8.5 by 11 sheet of loose leaf paper, A4, if you're not in the United States and you're not sure what that is, but still. That is a massive size, and just consider, if you were to try and build if you were just to line up chips that are currently out there now, RAM chips, you'd be able to get probably around 30 or 40 gigs of RAM in the same space as 1K used to take up. So I just thought that was kind of cool, and put that out there for everybody. Next little thing, we have two little architecture links that I thought I'd let everybody in on. The first one is BoClock. Yes, IKEA's ingenious affordable housing system is about to take root in the United Kingdom. Houses built to order by the flat pack people themselves, IKEA. There's a whole bunch of little images they have here. Basically, it's a new way to design and build houses that are affordable and quality controlled. So, kind of interesting. I'm not going to go all into it just because I thought this was kind of interesting and kind of cool. They're trying to bring stylish and affordable design down to the masses. So it's definitely something that you might want to give a look-see. This is over from Gizmag. We always find some really strange stuff over there. So it's definitely worth the look. Now, the other thing that we had on here is a sustainable development house. Yes, this is a green architecture at its finest. And I'm not sure sure if this thing's actually been built, but it's an awesome idea. What it is, it's a house that rotates. Well, yeah, I know. There's a massive solar grid on the top of the house, and I think we might have talked about something similar to this before. There's a massive solar grid that's on top of the house as it sits here, and what it does is during the summer months, it actually faces, or sorry, during the winter months, rather, it actually faces the door in the front and most of the transparencies towards the sun as it rotates in the sky to get the most warming effect from the... most warming effect from the sun. Sorry, I had a complete brain cramp right there for a minute. But, and then during the summertime, it actually rotates it the other way so that your front door and most of the living quarters are actually in shade. And at the same point in time, it rotates separately from everything else, the giant grid on the top, so that it actually catches a lot of the sun's rays. And then there, what looks like railings going all throughout the house, looks like railings and balconies out of each window, is actually piping. It's kind of a, it's a water warming piping system for both heating and cooling the house. It also heats and cools your drinking water. It's just an interesting little heat pipe technology running around the outside. Has a very small footprint, and I think it has a very limited area that it can be used in. You know, for instance, you have to have a lot of bright sun. But just an interesting, awesome little house that's off the grid. They have a whole bunch of interesting little pictures on there. And one of the funniest things about it is that a lot of sustainable houses that I've seen, anyway, what they're supposed to do is use no energy off the grid. Now, not only does this one use no energy off of the grid, but if you were to hook it into the grid, the energy company would actually have to pay you because it generates more electricity than it uses. I don't know if this is a little known fact for a lot of people. I know this is true in the United States, but I'm not sure if it's true elsewhere. But if your house generates more electricity than it uses, then the electric company will actually pay you, refund you, the amount of electricity you put back into the grid. So this could be a nice little moneymaker depending on how much electricity you're planning on using and putting back into the grid. Just kind of fun little thing. Now, the last two things we have here in the Tech Tidbits are not really, honestly, Tech Tidbits, but they're just, well, the one of them is, definitely, but the first one up is just an oddity that I found from Trend Hunter. How would you like an $85,000 teddy bear? Well, how would this be? Well, there's a company called Stief. It's a German company that creates teddy bears, and they have a 125th anniversary bear. This bear features, I'm just going to read the little blurb here, features a mouth made of solid gold, fur made from gold thread, and eyes with the pupils of sapphire and irises made from 20 tiny diamonds. They're only making 125 of this edition bear and were produced, making them not just hard to afford, but almost hard to find. These bears came with a price tag of $85,000. So it's a big hug for somebody you love. Now, this is not necessarily something you actually run out and get your little toddler. I don't know exactly how many of them are being sold either, or, you know, how many of them are being sold outside of the company. I could see them keeping a couple for big wigs and things like that. So one thing when they usually throw out there, oh yeah, there's only 125 of these actually made, people tend to say, okay, well, there's 125 for sale. Eh, not always. Usually, you know, the company itself will take, you know, 10 to 15 of the product and keep them for people inside the company as kind of a congratulatory present. Insane to even think about spending that much money on a teddy bear. And I thought it was crazy to spend $100 for one of those rocker things for the kid, but still. Now, the last thing we have here is just a complete bit of strange offbeat computer news. Do you have any old stuffed animals laying around the house? No, I'm not talking about, you know, like Big Ted or Little Ted or $85,000 teddy bear. No. I'm talking about a real stuffed animal. Like, Grandpa used to go hunting for deer, and he's not here anymore, but the deer still stares you down every time you walk downstairs. No, I'm talking about a computer that's built inside of a stuffed and taxidermied beaver. Yeah, the CompuBeaver proves that it can be just that, and it's a pretty functional PC. It's a respectable set of stats, too. 2 gigahertz Intel Core Duo processor, 160 gigabyte hard drive, and 1 gigabyte of RAM. Panasonic DVD writer. And of course, it's a custom job, so you won't be able to pick one of these things up, but Yeah, so that deer head that's sitting on your wall, that could be a server. The stuffed bear that's in your grandfather's basement, oh, right there you have a render farm. just an interesting way to use older stuff that's laying around. I was trying to convince my parents to actually allow me to use one of the suitcases that my grandmother took to Germany that my mom has to turn into like a media center PC, because she has it on display kind of out in the middle, because it's a really cool looking old suitcase. So I said, come on, just let me chop the back up a little bit. I'll throw a media center PC in there. It'll be awesome. Not so much, but a guy can dream, can he? All right, so that about ends it up for the tech tidbit section there. So hope everybody enjoyed that. Now we have, and we're running a little bit long. Brevity. We're going to run through the caffeinated bits we have here. Just a whole chock full of caffeinated goodness for you today. First up, the link that we've been meaning to include from people around that have sent in to us, but coffee as art. We have the photography element of this. This is coffee meets milk. Now, this is kind of coffee porn, to say the least. This is unbelievable, strange action shots, stop-motion photography of milk droplets hitting the surface of coffee. Now, it's just unbelievable the amount of detail. You're assured that this has to be a... a series of action shots, you know, like a stutter shutter, you know, where you just click the thing and it takes like 15, 20 shots within a second or something like that. It's just unbelievable the amount of detail that they have here, and it's gorgeous, to say the least. In the Philadelphia Museum of Art, that for a while there, they actually had a gallery exhibit of somebody who took pictures of bullets penetrating watermelon and fruit and stuff like that, and it looks a little bit of something like that, except this is a little bit more slow motion compared to that. So definitely head on over there. And then the next thing that's been sent in a couple times over the past little while, and I thought I'd throw it up here, is justcoffeeart.com. It's two painters who paint entirely with coffee. Now, you can buy original works from over there for $400 to $1,000, or you can buy the prints, limited edition prints, for around $10. Now, the only medium that they use here is coffee and espresso, so it's just really cool to see some of the stuff that they have up there. They have available works, things that you can buy. They have a picture of George Costanza done in coffee. They have a picture of, it's called Pride in Coffee. It's the national crest of Finland, where instead of the sword in the one arm, there's a cup of coffee poured down the gullet of the beast. So it's kind of cool. You can head on over there and check that out. That about done is the coffee and art, and that's a specific thank you to James and Fabrice for sending those over. Now, the next up, we have a little bit of a sad tale here, a real-life death by caffeine. This was from over at energyfiend.com. Apparently, some college student trying to... I don't know how to say this, but he was trying to stay up to fill out applications for scholarships and or find a job or something like that. And they say he took somewhere around the area of 24 pills of no-dose caffeine. Now, the difference between no-dose caffeine pills and a cup of coffee is that coffee takes a little bit longer to get into your bloodstream. No-dose, as soon as you take that, probably within 5 to 10 minutes, you are seriously feeling the burn from the caffeine. It's caffeine all at once, whereas 200 milligrams of caffeine each pill, so that's the maximum strength. Now, I've taken no-dose before, and I'm not a real big fan of them. I don't like the way they make you feel. I like the more organic caffeine that you get from drinking coffee, and that, besides the fact that I love the taste of coffee, to say the least. I mean, hey, I run a coffee-related podcast here, but still, they did some calculations and say roughly this gentleman took in excess of 4,800 milligrams of caffeine. Wow. So he passed out and suffered caffeine toxicity, what they said. He took a dose of 24 no-dose tablets, and his parents want them to say that, you know, want the warning label on the no-dose things to actually say, warning, it can kill you. Well, see, they have a recommended dose, and here's I don't think that there should be warning labels on everything. They say recommended dose, do not exceed more than one or two pills every, I think they said, oh man, I can't find the exact link, but it's like, do not exceed one pill every 3 hours. Well, if you're taking 24 pills, you're exceeding the limits on there. I mean, you don't see car makers saying, warning, if you go 300 miles an hour with this vehicle, you can die. No, because the speed limit is 55. So, I think at any point in time in your life, you really need to consider, you know, common sense. It's tragic, the outcome of that, and it kind of brings into stark realization the over at Energy Fiend, they have a death by caffeine thing. It tells you exactly how many cups of coffee, different things that it would take to off you. And they have a very big disclaimer over there. So, you know, if you decide to try this, and you and your stupid buddies, basically, and you die after 240, when we said it was going to be 248 cups of coffee, then it's your own fault. I think it's, last time I calculated everything out, it would take somewhere around 260 cups of coffee to kill me. I'm nowhere near 260 cups of coffee in a given day. I mean, I don't even think I'm near 260 cups of coffee. I mean, 6 ounce cups standard, but nowhere near that in like several weeks. I don't know. I'd have to actually calculate it out, but I think it would take me about like 3 or 4 months to get something like that in me. But still, just horrible to think about somebody actually dying from caffeine. And it's pretty sure like the guy's heart probably almost exploded. But all right, now the next thing up here, of course, because you know what's caffeine goodness without caffeinated milk? Yeah, you heard me right. They have a link up to a new product over from Energy Fiend called Slammers. These are sport milks, and they're imbibed with caffeine. All right, now if we take the perfect storm of coffee here. Now, the next link's not safe for children, but relatively. It's called Wake the F Up Coffee. We've reviewed it for you here before. It's $10 per pound, and you could guess what the F stands for, but still. It is exactly what it says it is. It's a very highly caffeinated coffee. So you take your Wake the F Up Coffee, you brew it with Buzz Water, which is water with caffeine in there, and then you cream it with Slammers. Now, all you need is a little bit of caffeinated sugar, and you will have the perfect storm of caffeine. Now, pardon me, my cat seems to want to climb all over the machine. Please be, Chili, for the love of God, don't do that. All right, all we need is a little caffeinated sugar. Now, if you wanted a little bit of a peppermint flavor in your coffee, you could actually use penguin mints to caffeinate and sweeten your coffee. So you could have highly caffeinated coffee, I mean, much more so caffeinated than regular coffee. You would have caffeinated water to brew it with, caffeinated milk to cream it with, and caffeinated sugar to sweeten it with. So I'm pretty sure by the end of that, you have enough caffeine from like a pot of coffee in one small, compact little delivery device. I'd like to try it at one point in time, but then again, I don't want my heart to explode. So, Just thought I'd throw that idea out there. Now, that is definitely the perfect storm of coffee. Hopefully nobody will try it, or if you do, please give us your comments, feedback, and suggestions on it. That about wraps it up for the Caffeination Podcast. Just in 42 minutes, man, that is a lot of content to shoehorn into 42 minutes there. Hopefully my voice, I think it's gotten a little bit worse off since the beginning of the show, but I think we've made it through with aplomb and style, so hopefully everybody enjoyed today's show. A little rundown on our affiliations and whatnot, and where you can find this show. For instance, if you're listening to this show over at the stream at the Tech Podcast Network, you can find it at www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. We accept all comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, whatever else you'd like to send our way, stories, anything else, at caffeination@gmail.com. We're a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here over at techpodcast.com. We're also a proud member over at the Blueberry Network. That's BLUBRRY. Blueberry, without the E's. It's a social podcasting network site, kind of like MySpace for podcasts. You have friends, you give reviews, the whole nine yards. Speaking of MySpace, finally we have myspace.com/caffeination for the Caffeination's home away from home over there. You can always find our episodes over there. And that about wraps it up for today's episode. Brevity, hardly that, but still, thanks for listening, everybody, and stay caffeinated, people.